Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I can't quit you, babe. But I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I can't quit you, babe. But I got to put you down for a while.
Hello, boxing fans, and welcome once more to Top Men Boxing Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of the Fight City, and with me is James Foley of Bad Left Hook, a man on boxing hit list, large and small, apparently. He's basically a boxing blog outlaw. So, Jesse James Foley, how many stupid blogs are you going to blog about this weekend, you blog face?
Oh, man, I don't know. Well, I'm planning my comeback at some point. We'll see, you know, if this weekend offers... I mean, it's like a modern Four Kings. So I mean, we got Hagler Hearns this weekend. So
that should
inspire some good writing.
Yeah, just to throw it out there, I'm pretty sure there's going to be some hyperbole about middleweight stuff because we're doing a history thing tomorrow, Aris and I. But yeah, there has been a little bit of heavy-handedness on the Hagler Hearns comparisons. And hey, man, I like Golovkin Lemieux too, but let's scale it back just a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that this fight should be presented as being between two equals. I mean, that's for sure. And I think that's the first kind of fallacy that's being purported.
Yeah, I mean, it's really easy to get carried away, and I understand why. Well, we obviously understand why we're looking forward to the fight, but, well, I mean, you know, sometimes at the beginning of the shows, I try to sneak in the recaps of the previous week, even if they're, like, you know, smaller cards or overseas fight cards. Sorry, James Bagg. But today, I think we'll just skip all that stuff. I mean, we'll leave it to the end and get right to what everyone wants to hear us discuss. Andy Fonfara versus Nate Cleverley. No.
Oh, man,
we'll
fight of the year potential.
Yeah, we'll have time for that, hopefully. But Gennady Golovkin and David Lemieux on HBO pay-per-view this weekend. I mean, if you're listening, you know that. And it's a clash that many have looked forward to, like we were just talking about, since its announcement. But prevailing thought is, you know, Foley was just mentioning that Golovkin will have too much everything for Lemieux, who has a wonderful head of hair and is quite dreamy, by the way. He also hits pretty hard. And that's why he's being given any chance at all to win. I mean, Foley, have you seen a line on this?
I think it's somewhere around 10-1.
Yeah, it's closed.
Might be a little lower, a little higher, depending.
Slightly. Yeah, it's closed slightly. That was about the average that I was seeing, was about 15-1. Does that sound about right to you?
Okay.
I mean, that sounds about right to me, to be honest.
It sounds right in my mind of what it should be, yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think sometimes, the marketing, the powers that be, you know, you dress something up and maybe it looks a little bit better than what it really is. And because this is, you know, a pay-per-view, it's just that kind of like counterintuitive, you know, you mean now I have to pay $70 to watch Golovkin fight? Well, then it must be better, you know? And, to be honest, I mean, I don't really regard Lemieux much higher than I did Macklin or Daniel Gill or most of Golovkin's recent opponents. He's a bigger puncher, but we'll see. I mean, I do think it could be a little exciting because they've kind of sold me on it a bit, but I don't think it's going to be really competitive, you know, and I think it's just a testament to how dominant that Golovkin's been. People want to see him tested, and that's maybe what this fight offers or the way that it's being sold to us, but... You know, if this was just a regular HBO card, I don't think the anticipation would be that great. I don't think we would be saying, you know, Lemieux is just Golovkin's most dangerous opponent by far. It would be another fight kind of like a Martin Murray or like a Daniel Keeler. Like, yeah, he's a competent, solid, you know, top 10 middleweight. In this case, he's got a little bit of power. So that's, you know, a new variable here. But, I'm just not really buying it as being a real competitive fight. To me, Lemieux is still... You know, we've heard about how he's evolved and become this new fighter, and he's not the same guy who got, you know, stopped by Rubio. And I agree. I mean, I think he's shown more stamina, and he's looked good in his last couple fights, but he still has been fighting guys on that level of the Gabe Rosados and Hassan Endom. And, you know, I'm just not convinced that Lemieux is any better than Golovkin's last five opponents. I mean, the weakest opponent that Golovkin fought was Rubio, who has a TKO win over Lemieux. So I don't know. What am I missing?
I don't really think you're missing that much. I mean, personally, I think that it's kind of one of those situations that where it's like they're not lying, but they're not really telling the whole truth. You know what I'm saying? Like when they say that that Lemieux is Golovkin's most dangerous opponent, it's like, okay, like that's kind of true. I mean, he probably hits harder than maybe any fighter that Golovkin has faced as a professional. I mean, whatever. I mean, you can split hairs and take Curtis Stevens over to that Ivan Drago, you know, punch simulator measuring device, whatever. But what it doesn't really matter. The point is that, yeah, probably Golovkin is the hardest hitting puncher that Golovkin, or I'm sorry, Lemieux is probably the hardest hitting puncher Golovkin has faced. But that's not the whole story. You know, we've seen a guy like Curtis Stevens hit Golovkin with some pretty big shots. And at the very least, Curtis Stevens hits similarly to Lemieux, even if it's lesser, you know, it's pretty comparable. And we've seen Golovkin already kind of laugh off those shots. Does that mean that he's unknockoutable? No, it obviously doesn't. We can see him hurt, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I'd like to see him tested, like before the Stevens fight. That's what I said. I want to see him tested. I want to see him hit. I want to see him wobbled, something, you know, something that shows that he's been through some adversity and can win. But yeah, the whole narrative, it's like, I understand we have to sell it, but let's not sell it too much. The reality is, yes, he's dangerous, but this whole, you know, 10-1, 12-1, 15-1 is probably accurate, meaning that Lemieux has about a, I don't know, 5-10% chance of winning. So
yeah,
apply that to the logic behind who is actually going to win and what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, and we've seen in boxing, I mean, it's definitely a sport where, you know, the class does matter, and you see matchups when guys are just in over their head. And, I mean, I just think that Golovkin's just too good. You know, I've been on board the Triple G train for a while, and I'm going to ride that out. You know, I'm taking him to beat Andre Ward. I'm taking him to go up and beat Kovalev. So, I mean, I really believe that he is one of the most special fighters in the whole sport. And to me, Lemieux is just kind of a big puncher who's got a lot of flaws and vulnerabilities. And, you know, we've seen his chin not hold up well in the past, and a lot of that was stamina. But, you know, I mean, Golovkin hits 10 times harder than Rubio does. So, I mean, you know, I don't have much to get it. I mean, I'm excited, like I always am, just to see another Golovkin knockout, another dominant performance. But I wouldn't necessarily be expecting a kind of two-sided action to make it, you know, transcend into a really special type of fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, they got to sell it. It's okay to sell it. There's nothing wrong with selling it, but, you know, don't give it the hard sell. Don't oversell it. It should be good for however long it lasts, but realistically, it's probably not going to last that long. So, you know, just let's just be honest about that part.
Well, you know, it's like he's in the main room at Madison Square Garden, and it's a pay-per-view. So it feels like it's a bigger fight. You know, but I'm just not necessarily buying it that it really is. When you look at the actual matchup on, you know, on paper and what's going to happen in the ring, I don't, you know, to me it's not very different than Golovkin Martin Murray or Golovkin Matthew Macklin, you know, or any of the fights Golovkin's had along the way. I mean, I think it's going to take a really, really, you know, elite special fighter to beat him, and I just don't think David Lemieux is that guy. But in watching the face off, I was kind of almost wanting him to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like Lemieux. I'm down, but I don't think he's the guy to do it. You know, and if he does happen to land a huge punch and somehow scores the knockout, you know, great. But I don't know. I mean, I don't see him beating Golovkin with anything other than a lucky, you know, or not necessarily lucky, but you know, anything other than a kind of a dramatic one punch out of nowhere type of thing.
Well, I actually asked Teddy Atlas for his insight, and he said, it'd been a while. It's been a while. I have to crack it
too
out.
Too long, too long.
Yeah, it's been too long. But, I mean, from watching the Road, HBO's Road to Golovkin-Lemieux, which, I mean, these types of productions from HBO, they're almost never bad. You know, it's always top-notch stuff. You know, you got Liv Schreiber doing the narration. It's good stuff. And on top of that, you know, Lemieux is a really easy character to root for, I think. You know, a single dad, you know, doing what he can, living in his semi-posh, you know, suburban house, you know. But he seems like a nice dude. He seems like a good guy. But one of the things actually it's not like you couldn't ascertain this from other things. You don't necessarily have to watch The Road to Golovkin-Lemieux to get this. But watching the training sequences, you can really tell that a lot of things about them in terms of style and how they deliver punches is different. The way that Golovkin throws punches is a lot tighter. It's a lot, you know, more compact. The technique is different, and you can even see when he's hitting the bag, Lemieux is real wide. You know, he doesn't really move his head almost at all. You know, he's kind of stationary as a target, which was why Rubio was able to find him really easily. Rubio has never really been a kind of elite, an elite type of fighter, but he found him pretty easily. And then after that, Alcine was just, I mean, it just doesn't bode very well for him. But
Alcine boxed his ears off.
Yeah. He's Alcine's Pernell Whitaker with a Canadian card, Canadian citizenship. But it doesn't really bode well for him. But it does also, there's nothing wrong with looking forward to the fight, though. It might not be something that we view as very competitive, but at the same time, it's going to be good as long as it lasts. And I think that people are kind of like seeing what the most of like the rest of 2015 has brought, and just kind of like, all right, well, we'll take it. It's going to end in a knockout, and that's guaranteed. We'll take that. So there's nothing wrong with looking forward to it, obviously. But just kind of don't be roped into the shit.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Lemieux's a total scrub. I mean, I think he's a talented fighter. You know, I do. But and you know, the narrative from his side is that, you know, he's improved a lot and he's bouncing back and he's still young and he's looked good in his last couple fights and that, you know, he really believes that he's ready to get on this stage against this type of fighter. So, you know, it's not as implausible as someone like Andre Berto talking himself up before the Mayweather fight. You know, I mean, I don't think that it's that type of a mismatch necessarily. I mean, I do in terms of the way it's going to play out, but I mean, I understand that on paper, you know, Lemieux's a legitimate top middleweight and he does have that, you know, one punch knockout power that, you know, he has been on a comeback trail. I mean, you can kind of buy what they're selling and get yourself excited for the fight. But, you know, I mean, just the deep skeptic in me is just looking at these two guys and I'm just like, Golovkin is totally legit. You know, I can see him losing to a fighter like Andre Ward, who's a great boxer, who can kind of impose his style and change the type of fight that he's in and make him uncomfortable. And I think in a fight like that, you know, it would be Golovkin who is all of a sudden taking such a huge step up in competition. And that's always tough to bet on. But here, you know, this type of fight against Lemieux, if they're brawling, if they're boxing, whichever way it goes, I mean, I just see Golovkin just having the edge in every single category. You know, so I just can't imagine. I mean, I'm guessing kind of what might happen is you're going to have kind of a close first round. Lemieux might land one good punch that kind of gets everyone excited, and then I think it's going to just be a complete bloodbath, and I think Golovkin stops him in the third or fourth round.
I'm really hoping he does not mess up Lemieux's face. I'm heterosexual and married. But
you're looking for a body shot. Yeah, you're looking for that body shot knockdown.
Yeah. I'm heterosexual and married. But I don't want anything happening to this man's mug. So this actually figures, like, the perception of how the fight will do and, you know, what people think about it actually does, you know, figure into what we're saying. And so I made the analogy briefly yesterday on Twitter, and it wasn't so much to directly compare the two. So, you know, bear with me. But while I started looking around to see how well most fans, pundits, and all that, you know, think that this pay-per-view will do, I noted that it was right around in maybe the 300,000 buys range. That seems to be about the median guess, maybe even a little below that. That seems reasonable to me and a pretty good guess, but just to throw out a little perspective, and again, not an apples-to-apples comparison, Roy Jones Jr. actually failed to break the 300,000 pay-per-view buy mark until he fought John Ruiz in 2003. I mean, and he'd fought on a number of pay-per-views and had drawn 12, 15, 20,000 to fights in a few different, like, even out-of-the-way places. But he was almost never a pay-per-view draw. When Jones versus Trinidad wound up doing, like, I think it was 550, they were, like, delighted. Like, oh, my God, we can't believe it did that much. So, I mean, we still have to see how the Lemieux pay-per-view does, or if Golovkin wins, for that matter. But I felt it was an intriguing thought for a Kazakhstani guy in the U.S. who is drawing well, you know, drawing good live gates and doing solid HBO ratings, and a guy whose popularity might not translate to pay-per-view buys just yet. What do you think this is going to do?
I'm a little bit bearish on the numbers, to be honest. You know, I think that it could end up doing pretty low. And I saw that Golovkin's promoter said that, you know, 200,000 buys would be a success. You know, I'm just looking at Canelo's first pay-per-view, and that was a good matchup against Lara. I mean, not stylistically, but it was, you know, a legit fight against the top guy in the division. That did, I think, in the mid-300s. You know, fights like, Mayweather's fight just did, 500,000? And that was one of the worst matchups ever. It was basically just carried completely by Mayweather's star power. And, you know, Lemieux's not really a name at all in the U.S. So, I mean, this is pretty much just on Golovkin and on the kind of HBO marketing machine. And I still think that it's more of a hardcore fight fans type of fight. You know, I don't think it's really a crossover that can get that kind of, mainstream appeal. And, you know, Canelo having such a huge built-in, you know, Mexican fan base, I think gives him a big edge. And you look at that number, which was like 350 or whatever. You look at some of Pacquiao's numbers against Rios and Algeri, which were in the 300s. I think for Golovkin to get to a number like that would be great. You know, it'd be pretty amazing. And I'm not sure that he's on that star power yet. You know, it's different. The fight's done really well at the gate, but I mean, that doesn't necessarily bode well for pay-per-view. You know, that's different. I mean, going to go see a fight, it's not the same as making the decision when you're at home to, you know, click that button and order it and pay $70 or whatever. So I'm not sure, man. I think I would guess probably, you know, 225, something like that. But it will definitely be, you know, an important number, and I think an interesting number. And, you know, if it does get in the 300 range, you can legitimately start talking about Golovkin as one of those, you know, kind of second fringe of stars behind the top guys. I mean, behind Cotto, Canelo. And it also, you know, would anticipate that a Golovkin fight against the winner of Cotto and Canelo would be a huge, you know, maybe a bigger event than people have thought. And it might validate something like Golovkin and Andre Ward happening. But if the number is really low, you know, if it's completely tanks and it's in the 100s, then it's obviously that the guy's not a pay-per-view attraction yet. And, you know, maybe he'll come back to HBO, so to regular HBO. But I don't know. I mean, I think the plan is to probably have him just be exclusively on pay-per-view. You know, the one other thing that hit me in the lead-up to this fight, which, you know, we've known for a while, but is that, you know, Golovkin is getting older. I mean, and how old is he, 33, 34? And that's the one kind of, like, sad part for me about seeing this, is he's kind of just now getting on the stage, and we really hope, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, him getting bigger and bigger fights that will be closer to, you know, even matchups and fighting the best in the, you know, in the world, whether it's Canelo coming, you know, emerging at 160 or whether it's Ward or whoever. But, you know, how much longer does the guy have? I mean, I think his style translates a little bit better to longevity than somebody like Sergio Martinez or Manny Pacquiao, but I don't exactly think that, you know, Golovkin is Bernard Hopkins either. So, I mean, how many more years does he have where he can kind of be on the top of the sport? Because he is so, you know, charismatic and compelling and likable, and I think he has all the ingredients, and the style is just great, you know, for fans. I mean, he's such an exciting fighter, but you know, is he really going to be the next flag bearer for the sport? I mean, he's not much, you know, younger. I mean, he's only a few years younger than Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously had a very different kind of career than Manny too, but still, it's not a bad point, and you can't really bank on Golovkin, you know, competing into his 40s or something like that. So his time is really limited. I'm surprised you don't think Kazakhstan's going to come out and represent Zent for this fight, but no, they probably won't. I would guess that. I mean, though, it sounds like it's doing very well in terms of the tickets and the gate and everything. So, I mean, it's probably going to be a really fun atmosphere. And we know a whole bunch of people from, you know, Twitter and, you know, the boxing social sphere and stuff like that. They're going to be going and meeting up, and it's probably going to be a blast for the fans and everything. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know exactly what to expect in terms of the pay-per-view numbers. I'm not super optimistic in terms of it being, a great fight. It might be exciting, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be one-sided. So, I mean, really, I'm not trying to just be like the wet sock dude that's, I just want to have a good fight, but that's kind of how it is. I want it to be a good fight. I want it to be, you know, Golovkin gets tested or even dropped or something like that, something crazy. So I hope something like that happens to make it worth everybody's while and to make it, you know, I don't know, maybe even draw more potential opponents in for Golovkin or something like that. I mean, you know, I think that also you mentioned Andre Ward, and I think that the prospect of that fight ever happening is probably slipping away with Andre sounding like he's going to be gravitating toward light heavyweight. And also I think that really banking on, taking on the winner of the Canelo Cotto fight could be a really huge mistake. Because if that fight's even competitive, they're probably going to have a rematch. So, I don't know, man. The time is kind of wasting away, and I think that it might have been the right move to really go after an Andre Ward fight. I could be wrong. I'm not a big Andre Ward fan. I think that that's a fight that Gennady Golovkin could and maybe would lose, but that's, you know, going after stuff like that is kind of what creates greatness, I think, when guys win those kind of fights.
Yeah, and it's not fair to have suggested, like, you know, hey, Mayweather's dominated everyone at welterweight. He should go up and fight. He should fight Golovkin. You know, it's not fair to make those type of suggestions without holding Golovkin to the same standard. So, absolutely. I mean, I think Ward is the best fighter in that weight area. You're right. It does sound like he's going up to 175. You know, a fight with Ward and Kovalev would be amazing, but that's kind of what I'd hoped he would do, although the plan to stay at middleweight seems to kind of be paying off. I mean, he's definitely raised his profile and gotten more popular and all that. But the one criteria here in this fight that I just think that, like you touched on, and it to me just really kind of disqualifies me from being too excited about a fight, is when you have basically this, you know, script that we're all kind of thinking it's going to go to that. And like you said, like the only way that it gets exciting or it's worth our money is if Lemieux, you know, hurts Golovkin badly or knocks him down or, you know, wins. So it's kind of like the only way that it ends up being worthy is if what we, you know, the unexpected happens. Whereas you look at, you know, the real great matchups, like I consider Canelo and Cotto, and that's kind of like, it's worth, you know, no matter what happens, we're just excited to see what happens. We don't really know. Is Canelo going to dominate him? Is Cotto going to look really sharp like he has under Freddie Roach and, you know, be able to, you know, kind of impose his style and take over? But whatever happens, it's like, we're not really sure, you know, and that's going to be, that's why it's so exciting to watch. It's why Mayweather-Pacquiao was so compelling. You know, it became very obvious early on how that was going to go, but it was that anticipation of not really knowing and thinking, like, for the first time in a really long time, Mayweather's in there with something close to an equal, and how is that going to play out? This fight, it's kind of like, goes according to script. Golovkin dominates, he batters him, he knocks him out. Yeah, it's exciting on a visceral level to watch another human being do that. But as far as a sport and, you know, a competition, it's missing. And so I just don't like fights where I'm going into it basically with the same mindset that you have, which is kind of like, it's only going to be exciting if the 15-1 underdog somehow lands a huge punch and turns the tide, because we basically are, you know, I've already filled out my scorecard, and I had it 40-33 Golovkin at the time of stoppage.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I've heard this said from a number of people. And when I was a little bit younger, and I guess didn't really, I didn't have my fight scoring matrix and my G-Jab simulator really fine-tuned. I sometimes it's surprising how well I can deadpan that shit. It's kind of surprising, it really is. But I really did used to think, oh well, he's got a puncher's chance, so that's a legit chance. Once I started to kind of realize, like, you know, getting a little older, looking at fights a little more maturely, and, you know, putting my pinky up as I'm drinking my fucking tea while I'm Earl Grey tea while I'm watching fights. But, you know, I started to realize that this whole puncher's chance thing, it's really bogus, dude. If it comes down to a fighter having a puncher's chance, that means they have almost no chance. That means that there's a reason why things like that happen are fucking upsets. You know, when that happens, when the guy banks on the puncher's chance, like, you know, Haseem Rahman, Lennox Lewis won, where that was literally, like, the only chance the dude had, and he cashed in, and he got it. I mean, good for him. I'll applaud him. Give him a pat on the back. He'd probably kick the shit out of me. But, yeah, I mean, that's good, but that rarely happens, and that's why those things are a surprise. So that's pretty much what we're looking at here. That's my long-winded way of saying Foley summed it up way better than I did.
No, I mean, I think it was, you know, I would say way better.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it comes down to, the puncher's chance.
But, you know, like you said, I mean, it's going to be a big event. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. You know, you got Chocolatito on the undercard, your ultimate boy, the greatest pound-for-pound fighter probably ever. But
of all time.
You know, just, So, I mean, I'm gonna order it. I'm going to watch it for sure, but I'm just not really expecting anything to really, you know, have me jumping off the couch. I mean, I think a fight like, you know, Matisse and Postol, even though I thought it was one-sided going in, I mean, that really had potential. Obviously, it was a much, you know, different matchup than what I thought, and that's the type of thing that has me, you know, wow. And that's why I love boxing, because it can be so unexpected, but I just don't expect it. I just don't see, you know, Lemieux having the tools to be able to really get inside. I mean, he was such a, you know, like you said, he throws those big winging power punches. And I think Golovkin's a really sharp boxer on top of just having power. I mean, there's nothing Gennady Golovkin can't do in boxing or in life.
Yeah, I mean, I once saw him make a bracelet out of babies. I applauded it. I was a big fan. There's nothing he can't do in boxing or in life. But, you know, it is kind of a winning formula, or at least I think it's probably going to wind up being a winning formula anyway. They did it, was it the following weekend, the weekend after Mayweather-Pacquiao, or two weekends after, I can't remember, but the Golovkin-Roman Gonzalez, you know, heavy-duty combo. It's the pay-per-view co-feature for anybody living under some form of boulder. Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, he's fighting on the undercard. Again, and this time takes on Brian the Hawaiian Punch Valoria, a little fighter that American fight fans should actually be familiar with. Valoria was an Olympian for the U.S. in 2000, a decorated amateur. He has a ton of experience fighting international competition. He's fought in 13 world title fights, became the first flyweight to unify two belts in the division in nearly 50 years. I mean, the list goes on, but so does his age. Unfortunately, and as a fighter who worked his way up to flyweight, 112 pounds. I'll let you think about that for a second. Worked his way up to 112 pounds. So Valoria is 34, and that's ancient. I can't count Valoria out, but Gonzalez is one fighter who specializes in exploiting weaknesses. I don't know why I specifically looked up odds for these fights, because I don't really usually, but considering many of us look forward to them, the odds are relevant. That said, the odds that I saw have this fight at about 12-1 that Gonzalez will win. Is that too dismissive of Valoria, or just a ton of respect for the fighter many are calling the best in the world now that Floyd Mayweather is retired and having candlelit dinners with Justin Bieber? Are those odds right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the odds for this and the main event are both pretty much where they should be. You know, I think both guys are big favorites. And, they probably could even be wider, but you know, in terms of the Gonzalez-Filoria fight, I just don't see a lot of ways that Filoria can win the fight, you know, and I think he's a good fighter. He's one of the better fighters around that weight area. But similar to, you know, on top of the fact that he's older, he's been through a lot of tough fights. I think that, you know, on top of all that, I mean, I just think Gonzalez is a special fighter who I would pick to beat Filoria in his prime, at the peak of his powers. So, you know, there's no reason to kind of go against the favorites here. But you're right. I mean, it is interesting that they've been able to kind of package together Golovkin and Chocolatito, who are both two really special fighters that, you know, are kind of awesome to watch regardless of the opponent. But, you know, how much longer can they do this if these do turn out to be kind of one-sided showcase fights? You know, because everyone was really excited for this card, and a lot of people are excited for the card. And I'm not trying to, like, dampen anyone's enthusiasm. It's just my own personal belief that, you know, at the end of the day, we're getting two fairly wide mismatches. And the odds tell you that. You know, I think the odds are the truest form of kind of, you know, when you're trying to cut through all the bullshit when it comes to marketing fights and you know, all the salesmanship that goes into it, I think the odds, you know, that's where the money is. So, I mean, that's really putting your money where your mouth is. And the fact that both of these guys are double-digit favorites, which, like you said, translating it into a percentage, that's like, you know, they 95% chance to win the fights. That's not very interesting from a, you know, competitive standpoint. So, you know, that's the only problem here. Now, in both cases, you know, obviously with Gonzalez, you know, there's a couple really good fights. You know, the rematch with Estrada would be good. Gonzalez would still be a pretty healthy favorite in that. A fight with Inouye would be, you know, a great fight at some point that a lot of boxing fans would love because he's another kind of up-and-comer and looks like a really special fighter, you know, around those weight classes. But, you know, it's not like Gonzalez has a ton of great options, and Valoria is a good name, and he's been around the division, and he's a good fighter. You know, he's competent enough that he should at least kind of test Gonzalez and force Gonzalez to, you know, bring out his best fight to beat him, which he probably will do. And same with, you know, Golovkin doesn't have a lot of options either. So they have to fight somebody. I think the bigger issue is kind of putting it all together and making it into a pay-per-view and kind of, you know, again, selling us kind of the fighters rather than the fights, which, you know, they're 15-1 favorites. So they can't be that great.
Yeah, it's it's the hard sell. It's the old hard sell. I mean, we get it. We know that there has to be some sort of, you know, company line. It's understandable, but I mean, I don't know which fight should have wider odds. I don't really know. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter when they're 10, 12, 15-1, which one is 10, which is 12. It doesn't really matter because roughly the same thing, which is the underdog doesn't have a real great chance to win the fight. You know, at the very least, though,
yeah,
Lemieux does have.
I kind of feel like maybe, yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, at the very least, Lemieux has youth, and I mean, we've seen him falter before. We've also seen Valoria falter, though. I think it probably takes a lot more to really break him down and to, you know, quote unquote, expose him. But he's also 34. For a little guy, that's really old.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost kind of think that, it'd be more likely for Valoria to win than for Lemieux to win. But, you know, to talk yourself into any scenario where either the two underdogs win, I think requires a lot of, like, you know, well, this guy would have to have an off night, and this would have to happen, and, you know, it's just not, I mean, you know, I just don't, I think, you think, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of have to invent a lot of scenarios for either guy to really be able to win. I mean, obviously in the case of Lemieux, yes, we imagine, well, if he lands one clean punch, but, you know, I mean, that can be true of any fight for one thing. And on top of that, I mean, Golovkin looks like he has a pretty great chin. So if Lemieux does land one big punch, it may not just, you know, turn Golovkin's lights out. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I definitely wouldn't pick either underdog. I feel relatively comfortable saying that, but, you know, I mean, I also said that Matisse would handle Postol easily, and he made a few other, you know, whack. I mean, I said that I thought Berto would, you know, completely outbox Mayweather, so.
Man, I mean, didn't we all pick Berto over Mayweather, though? Who didn't?
I got caught
Come
up
on,
in groupthink.
You can't after the fact go back and change your pick and be like, I knew Floyd was going to win. We were betting pretty heavy on that Berto shoulder roll. That's our fault.
Well, it looked great against. Yeah, I mean, it looked great against Soto Carras before his bicep got separated.
It happens, you know. I thought, well, against Floyd, he got separated from being a good fighter at all. But you know, anyway.
Well, he made $3 million, so he's actually had probably one of the better years for among all fighters.
Yeah,
when you think about
it. The moral of the story is, while we're over here talking shit on a fucking podcast that like 30 people listen to, he got millions of dollars. So
And the other interesting thing is he took less punishment in that fight than any of his previous fights.
Yeah, I know. It was really minimized, maybe helped by the fact that Floyd really was trying to be like, all right, just want to get through this and retire. But hey, good for him. You know, I'll give Andre Berto a real pat on the back the next time I see him. As far as Valoria, the problem with depending on him for much is that he's a really like Jekyll and Hyde type of fighter. I mean, in one fight he looks beastly, strong, quick, you know, smart, and then in another fight he looks kind of sluggish or seems comfortable starting slow. So, I mean, we're just kind of adding to the list of reasons why he probably is not going to win. I mean, he's on a decent win streak right now, and he can really punch, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's my own wishful thinking driving the prediction, because I like Gonzalez, but I think he'll probably send Valoria packing. Maybe even retiring. Who knows?
Yeah, and I mean, looking at the Estrada-Valoria fight, I think, again, just makes me, you know, think that Gonzalez will have an even easier time. And that was, you know, a couple of years ago. But, and, you know, some of Valoria's, like, wins recently, he's beaten, were kind of older guys from the division, weren't they? Like, who did he fight, like, Tyson Marquez or somebody like that?
That was a couple of years ago. Well, the Tyson Marquez fight was the unification one that I was talking about, but he's fought mostly like nobody of note. He fought Omar Soto in his last fight, and that was in, I want to say, June or July, and he sent him down a couple times, you know, in the first round and took him out, but I can't even remember who else he's fought since the Estrada fight because I don't think it was really anybody that noteworthy. He fought on the Macau card.
Yeah, I remember that.
So he got to hang out with Lupe Contreras, so that's cool.
Well, ever since my one boy, what was his name, Zoo? Ever since Siming lost, you know, I've just kind of been totally disillusioned with the flyweight division, so I haven't really.
Yeah, well, you know, ever since I realized that, you know, Ruin Wrong, absurd. I'm really just, you know, disenfranchised with this whole flyweight business. Now, it's a great division, and there's a lot of weird characters, and I really wish there were more focus from American TV on it, but that's just not really ever going to happen. So we could talk about it, but it ain't going to happen. I was kind of mentioning it earlier about the whole Madison Square Garden thing, but I mean, it sounds like they're expecting a sellout or a near sellout, which is great news for anybody rooting for this card to do well. I mean, the pay-per-view numbers have to also fall in place, but there are a few other fighters on the card that likely won't have anyone buying it, but add intrigue anyway. I mean, for instance, Cuban heavyweight Luis Ortiz is on what could be considered, I guess, a comeback trail after testing positive for nandrolone following his quick win over Latif Coyote in 2014. You know, you remember Latif, Mr. I Fuck He Up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm going to say that he will forever be that guy for me. I can't separate Latif Coyote from I Fuck He Up.
Well,
it's not going to happen.
I can't see him ever doing anything greater than that in a boxing ring.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. And, I mean, especially considering because Ortiz beat the crap out of him and he forced the stoppage in under a round. And he, you know, returned after that because he tested positive, like I said, for the first time in June. And he'll be fighting an Argentinian named Matias Vidondo for some interim version of the WBA heavyweight. But I mean, if you needed any other reason why these alphabet organizations are just totally laughable, it's like, you know, one guy you've never heard of, another guy who fought like a nobody right on the heels of testing positive for a banned substance, fighting for some version of the heavyweight title. That's all you really need to know. Ortiz is 36. Time is short. Historically, Cuban heavyweights haven't exactly excelled as professionals. We've talked about that with, you know, Bryn Jonathan Butler. We've talked about it with other people. So he has a few things working against him. But we like watching big people beat on other big people. And beat off other big people, maybe. But that's a story for another time. So, Luis Ortiz, Foley.
I got nothing, man. I remember the result against Coyote, and I didn't even know that he tested positive for steroids. So, you know, I'll watch a big heavyweight guy knock out another heavyweight, I guess. I hope that the fight doesn't suck.
Yeah, I drug he up. Nah, it was a short fight. It was quick. It was like he kind of surprised him, kind of blitzed him. You know, it kind of looked like Latif got caught cold. But
was
I mean,
that
past that,
first official L.
I think so, yeah, because the Tarver fight was a draw, I believe,
yeah, it was
right?
A draw. Yeah, that was one of the worst televised cards of all time.
That was awful. Yeah, that was just awful.
Four fights that like all went 12 rounds. It's like 5 hours of none of them were good. The Tarver Coyote fight might have been the best fight.
It was one of those, like, we'll throw a bunch of names on a fight card and hope it's good type of thing, and it just was not good. It was a bunch of names, but, like, none of the fights were very they were competitive, just not entertaining. But I think that was the one with, what's his name? Austin Trout versus Delvin Rodriguez.
Yeah, that was the fight I remember from that card.
It's not good. But, yeah, I think that was his first official L, and Luis Ortiz is actually undefeated. But I mean, you know, like I said, he's 36. That means a little bit less, I think, at heavyweight than it does at a much smaller weight. And especially for a guy like Ortiz who he's not like a seasoned pro, so he hasn't taken a shitload of punishment or anything. But I mean, I don't know. He's been moved along somewhat slowly, I guess. I mean, in the last few years, that's usually not a very good sign. So, I don't know. Anyway, it just adds a little bit of spice to the card, I suppose. That's all. Yeah. Oh, actually, deserving of a mention, in my opinion, Turiano Johnson fights Eamon O'Kane. O'Kane is not worthy of mention. I'm sorry. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's mostly for Turiano. I mean, those not familiar with him.
Is that
anyway,
on the pay-per-view?
Not a big name. What's that?
Is that on the pay-per-view?
I think so. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be televised or not, but it's listed on the card. I don't know. Am I making that shit up? Did I look somewhere wrong?
No, I don't know. I forgot to look. I didn't know if it was four fights. Are we getting four fights, or did they just decide now to only give us three fights?
I don't know. Well, it's
like everything, like, become, you know, one card has three fights, so now every card can only have three fights.
I don't know why they seem to kind of really arbitrarily choose these type of things. But yeah, he's listed on the card, and it's four 12-round fights. The ones we've talked about so far are all 12, including the Turiano Johnson one, or at least it's scheduled for 12 on BoxRec. So, I mean, if you're unfamiliar with him, you included, that's probably not really that crazy. He's probably known more for Twitter, unfortunately.
Well, no, I know Turiano from, you know, a couple fights, and
the Curtis
Stevens fight. Stevens fight. Many were suggesting he should get the Golovkin fight.
It sounded for a minute like he was going to before they really started pushing for the Lemieux fight, but I mean, you know, he gave a good account of himself in losing to Curtis Stevens, though, you know, pretty controversially. Johnson looked to be winning, kind of outworking Stevens, and he got caught and rocked before getting stopped, likely pretty prematurely. And he's been kind of ignored ever since. I mean, he's 31, so he doesn't have a heap of time, but seems like a solid fighter. He's active on Twitter, nice guy. And if he follows me on Twitter, I'm going to root for him. Everybody knows that. So.
Yeah, he's up there on Twitter. I mean, him and Caleb Truax, two of the best fighters, and of course Shane Mosley, some of the best follows on Twitter. But man, you want to talk about a steaming pile of shit, though? Have you checked out the Canelo Cotto undercard?
No, I haven't.
I just glanced the other day. I mean, that looks awful. Jeez.
That's not good.
I can't even remember who was on it. I think it was like, I don't even know. I don't want to even say any names, but it looked pretty bad.
I guess it's not really much of a departure from when they generally do bigger pay-per-views. They tend to put all the money and all the effort toward the main event and, like, not really give a shit about anything else. So,
yeah. Well, you can't have a good main event and a good undercard. I mean, that's absurd.
No, that's – I think that's illegal in some jurisdictions.
Yeah.
But
the Muhammad Ali Act forbid that.
Yeah, the clause of disallowing things. That's how it is. Yeah, it's a law. It's a legal term. It's a lot of jargon. I won't get into it right now. But that's disappointing because
5,500 word article coming out about it.
Yeah. That's the old G undercard. Sometimes a C undercard.
Yeah.
Depending. That's really I never understood that though. I mean, Don King, for all the craziness and stupidity and corrupt shit, he really in the very least, you know, when he had big pay-per-view cards, he had big pay-per-view cards. He didn't just put all the money toward the main event. He wound up like, he was like, "All right, fuck it. We're going out in a blaze of glory. All my fighters line up. You're fighting him, you're fighting him, you're fighting him. Let's go." You know, it was like, "All right, let's do this." I hated Don King, but he used to put on some pretty epic pay-per-views, and I just never understood wasting that opportunity for other people in your stable when you're potentially going to have that many eyes on this card. It's going to be a huge main event.
Yeah, the Canelo Cotto co-feature might as well be like Jose Cotto versus Ricardo Alvarez or something like that. I mean, that's basically what it is. I think it's like some prospect, one of Cotto's prospects from his promotional company against like complete scrub, and then I can't even remember.
It's unfortunate. It's a wasted opportunity, but it's kind of par for the course too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, luckily for us. Luckily, also on this Saturday, though, Lamont Peterson faces unbeaten Dominican Olympic gold medalist Felix Diaz Jr. on NBC. It's earlier in the day in a premier boxing champions show, but it's from Fairfax, Virginia, and it's unlikely to even come close to competing with Golovkin-Lemieux in pretty much any way. But nonetheless, Peterson, he's a relevant figure in the 140 to 147-pound range. The names right in that area. Diaz is likely the one being brought in to fluff up Peterson's ledger a bit, and not vice versa. I mean, Diaz has had some kind of subpar performances against fighters that aren't even approaching Peterson's level. So, I mean, he might be unbeaten, but he has fewer than half of the pro fights that Peterson has. Who knows? We might get another surprisingly competitive fight. But Peterson is a guy that kind of seems to fight up or down to the level of opposition, so it'll make for a long day of boxing on television anyway.
Yeah, what time is that fight on? Is that so it's not on, like, prime time?
I want to say it's on at, like, 2 or something, like, you know, like early afternoon or something like that. So I think that it's, yeah, we got time.
I kind of like that fight, actually. You know, I don't think it's terrible. I mean,
I don't think it's terrible either.
A big step up for Diaz.
Yeah, it's clearly a step up for Diaz, and I mean, I think that if you were going to try to assign, some kind of Teddy Atlas meaning to this, where you know there's some ulterior motive or some type of like promoter. Anyway, it's probably Diaz being brought in to lose to Peterson and not vice versa. But like I said, Lamont Peterson, he's like kind of unpredictable as a fighter. One day he looks great, the next day he kind of didn't really look that great, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's you know, I think that's, I mean, that's fine. You know, that's a decent little kind of Saturday afternoon deal. I mean, it's above average for PBC, so.
Well, you know, it's not total shit. It's not Bracero O'Connor. Yeah, no, it's really not. It's not that bad. But, I mean, I don't think that they were – it's not like they were attempting to go head-to-head with the pay-per-view anyway. I think that they're just kind of like, well, we got the slot, so we're using it. A little NBC action, too. It's free. I forgot. In that PBC on NBC co-feature, we'll probably get – snake charmed with some more undefeated hyperbole. I mean, two unbeaten fighters square off in Pritchard Colon and Terrell Williams. Between them, the only noteworthy opponent is Vivian Harris. And that's not the best sign, needless to say. But they both have relatively high knockout percentages, and they're both kind of lanky welterweights. So logic would suggest that someone's getting knocked out. So that's good.
Oh, that's the co-feature for the Lamont fight?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, never. I think I've heard of Pritchard Colon. I don't think I've ever heard of Terrell Harris, but or Terrell Williams. But, yeah, you know, two undefeated guys, I guess it's always never a bad thing.
Doesn't necessarily mean anything, but, yeah, it's not a horrible thing anyway. We're probably shouldn't get, like, gypped or anything like that. We should go in understanding that it's just two younger undefeated guys, but... we'll take it. Probably a bit more box, like, you know, what do they call it? Show box than, you know, NBC
yeah.
co-feature type of business. But whatever. That's fine. Ain't so bad. But there are two competing cards on Friday. They both have some Chicago flair, man. The first one is from the UIC Pavilion in Chicago. I don't know if you're going to it, but that's the one headlined
no,
by
I can't
yeah,
go.
Andy Fonfara and
I'm pissed.
Nathan Cleverly. But another PBC show, this time on Spike. I know you're hyped for it, though, at the very least.
I'm hyped. I mean, I'll have to record it because I got a thing that night. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's an okay fight. You know, I make Fonfara the favorite, obviously, because of the way things have gone the last couple fights. I think, you know, Cleverly has looked a little shaky, and he really got destroyed by Kovalev. And I do think Fonfara is a guy who, you know, is – He's improved a lot, and I mean he's never going to be, you know, a great fighter, but I think he showed against Stevenson, and then the beating that he gave to Chavez, that he's a solid top five light heavyweight right now, and he's a guy who can, you know, has some heart and he can throw some punches, and I think that against Cleverly, who's more of a boxer, I think Fonfara will be able to kind of stalk him and reach him, and he's going to have the huge crowd advantage, and you know. Probably anything close. I mean, he's clearly being billed as the A side in the PBC promotions, so you got to think he'll get the edge from the judges if it goes that way. But I actually kind of think Fonfara wins by TKO. But you know, I'm always excited to watch the Polish Prince, man.
The Polish Prince, is that an actual nickname for him, or
that's
something
nickname.
You came up with? That's awesome.
No, that's his nickname.
I never noticed it.
Nickname.
That's pretty funny. I mean, a couple of years ago, if this fight were happening a few years ago, I'd probably be like, Cleverly's probably a little bit too more, a little bit too experienced for him. But
I picked
Cleverly
to beat Kovalev. You know what the fuck? I picked Cleverly to beat Kovalev at the time.
Well, he's a very talented fighter, but he lacks punching power. And he moved up in weight and then back down. And that's usually not a great sign. I mean, I can't think of a whole ton of fighters who moved up in weight and then back down and did great. But Fonfara starts slowly. However, once he connects, it should be trouble. And Cleverly's been hurt and stopped before. So, yeah, I have to lean Fonfara without pretty much any question. I don't really know where Cleverly's at in his career right now. I thought that the showing against Belu was pretty dismal. I mean, he won too, and I was like, dude, you got some reflecting to do.
Yeah, I mean, he had two, you know, kind of tough fights with Belu, and obviously the second one he lost pretty clearly. And, you know,
that's the thing. I mean, I do think this is kind of a crossroads fight in the sense of Bonfire is on his way up, you know, and Cleverly is kind of on his way down. And, you know, I think that the confidence from the last couple of fights, I mean, I thought Bonfire would get blown away by Adonis Stevenson. I was shocked that he was able to survive those early rounds and come back and even be able to make it a fight, you know. And even after that, I thought against Chavez, I mean, I thought that was kind of a toss-up fight. You know, because neither guy's really, I was just kind of thinking, well, they're both kind of screwed. They don't have great defense, you know, and it could be kind of a slugfest, and I think both guys will be there to be hit. And Fanfara just beat the crap out of him. I mean, it was like a boxing lesson and then just a beating. He was just so much sharper, and, you know, a lot of that I think is limitations of Chavez. But, I mean, I think I think Fanfara is really building himself up now, you know, and he's going to be coming in with a lot of confidence. And like you said, I mean, I think the lack of punching power and just the recent experience, I mean, I think everything points to Fanfara being able to kind of win this fight pretty easily. And then we'll see. You know, it looks like they're probably going to set up Fanfara-Stevenson rematch, which, you know, it's not quite Kovalev-Stevenson, but I think Fanfara kind of has distinguished himself as one of the next-level best fighters behind Kovalev and Stevenson in that division.
Yeah, I thought that, I mean, I really thought that Stevenson-Fanfara going into that fight, I mean, we could probably go back and listen to the preview of it on here. My guess is we probably
aren't here. Delete that.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go back and delete it as soon as I can. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure we both saw that fight like, man, this is a stupid-ass Showtime offering. You know, fucking Espinoza, this is bullshit. And then, you know, it winds up being not only competitive, but Stevenson was kind of having to hang on there for a little bit. And, you know, I don't think he lost the fight, but there was certainly, it was kind of a moral loss, you know, where a lot of people going into that fight were like, Fanfara has no business competing for the light heavyweight title. And it was kind of like, well, shit, I guess maybe he does, or I don't know. And then, yeah, the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight was like, oh, man, come on. This is kind of bullshit, you know, what the hell. This is mostly competitive but lower-level stuff, and then Fanfara just beat the shit out of him. So, yeah, I just got to think that Cleverly, without any type of serious punching power, just doesn't really pose much of a threat. I could be wrong. Well, maybe we're just always wrong about Fanfara fights, so who knows? Not a very good track record for us.
Well, he's looked really good in his last couple fights, you know, and I mean, and that's giving Stevenson a lot of respect, because I think Stevenson's a really, really good fighter, you know. I mean, I think he is an elite fighter. And you know, obviously he's better than Fanfara, but just to hang in there, and like, he looks great against Chavez Jr., but he's been inconsistent kind of going, you know, to the last 2 years. I thought he looked really good against Glenn Johnson, and that was kind of a step up fight at the time. And then Carpency was kind of just beating him around the ring until that fight had a really bizarre stoppage. So that's not good. And he looked like shit against Gabe Campillo for the first few rounds. And I think Campillo was totally shot going into that. And Fanfara kind of bailed himself out with a big knockout, but you know, he has looked inconsistent, but he's also looked really good the last couple of fights. So I got to go with the recent trend and think that that's going to continue. And I just hope I'm not dumb enough to talk myself into predicting Fanfara to beat Stevenson in the rematch.
Sorry about that. I had to like step away for like literally 4 seconds.
No, it's all good.
Yes, he has looked inconsistent, and that's kind of probably why we're calling these fights wrong beforehand, and makes us feel dumb, makes us feel ineffectual, like little bloggers. When's that next Folo punch coming out, by the way, Foley? We got some real big fans, real big fans of it, waiting for that to come out. But
yeah, hopefully soon.
Well, one of the very talented, what's that? Go ahead.
No, go.
it was just going to be more shit talk.
Yeah.
One of the very talented Kameda brothers fights in the PBC on Spike co-feature. Koki Kameda gets in there with Kohei Kono. And Kameda sounds very confident about his chances. I mean, not that we would expect much different, but he probably should, since Kono can be outboxed, outmaneuvered. You kind of do, unfortunately, this is one of those hipster type of fighters that you do have to look up. He hasn't been on TV much available for U.S. audiences. But, you know, he's been on the Japanese scene for a while. He's fought a number of names in the light flyweight to bantamweight range and usually loses to the higher quality ones. But Koki Kameda, his younger brothers Tomoki and Daiki, were unsuccessful in the U.S. recently, so this is an important fight for their family, I'd imagine, if that's not laying it on too thick.
Their family's honor is at stake in this fight.
It's a real Hatfield and McCoy situation for sure.
They all fought on the undercard at the UIC Pavilion last time, or like a year ago. So it's like Chicago's become the second home for Kameda.
Apparently.
The Kameda brothers. Yeah.
I don't know if they all speak Spanish, but I know Tomoki speaks very good Spanish. But I also do know that Chicago has a very big Mexican community. So maybe that's why. I literally have no clue whatsoever. But maybe 9-ish months ago or something like that, maybe even less, when Al Heyman had signed all the Kameda brothers, I was like, oh, this is interesting. What are they going to do with that? They haven't really done a whole lot with them. They've mostly stuck them on undercards. But the Tomoki Kameda versus Jamie McDonald fights were worthwhile and entertaining, in my opinion, even if Tomoki did way too much whining about what should have happened afterward. But still, it is kind of interesting that they are kind of tapping into the Japanese scene a little bit. I mean, not really. It's not like they've totally taken over the Japanese scene, but the Kameda brothers are big on the Japanese scene, and bringing them over is, you know, pretty significant. I would have to say that of the three brothers, at least from what I've seen, Tomoki is maybe the quickest in terms of, you know, like being athletic and stuff like that, but Koki Kameda is probably the best fighter. I could be wrong. I guess could be proven wrong, but of the three, he seems like the best to me.
Only one loss to the great Pon Sekek Won Jen Kong.
you did that pretty good. He probably, you know, Won Jong Kam is a, or I should say was, a truly great fighter. I mean, yeah, well, I'll get geeked out and stuck into going all over the history and shit like that, but Won Jong Kam actually was a very good fighter. So, I mean, losing to him is no shame whatsoever. But Koki has had a number of pretty close fights too, like some kind of a, you know, by the skin of his teeth type of wins. So we'll see, though. Fairly entertaining style. Too bad you're not going to be catching that one live.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed about it. But
how far do you live from the UIC?
It takes me like 45 minutes to get down there. The UIC Pavilion is kind of like right outside downtown. I live on the far north side, so it's, you know, a bit of a hike, but driving it would be like 20 minutes. I guess I'm thinking, you know, taking the train and then hopping on the bus like the scrub that I am would take a little bit longer, but.
Well, that way you don't have to drive home drunk, or when Ben Lemon, you know, he doesn't have to carry you home.
Well, he just rents a limo.
Oh, well, that actually sounds more like the Ben Lemon we know and love.
Yeah.
An all-white limo.
Right, of course. An all-white.
We love you, Ben.
I got like my wife's, she finished grad school, so it's like a graduation party.
Nice.
But who knows? If it's really bad, maybe I'll just step out. Yeah, I got to run to the corner store for a second, hop in that cab, go check out Funfara, knocking out Cleverly, and show up like an hour and a half later, like nothing happened.
You smell of booze and cigarettes, and you're like, babe, craziest thing happened.
Yeah, I
would
go for
the end of the story. You just go, craziest thing happened, and forget about everything.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, if the party's going well and there's a lot of people there, maybe I can disappear for a couple hours unnoticed.
That is possible. It's happened before.
Wouldn't they? Yeah.
Well, the competing card with that whole Funfara Cleverly business is a top-ranked card on True TV. I don't even know if I get that. I don't think I get that channel at all, really. But it's between Shawnee Monaghan. Have we all come to the conclusion that it's Monaghan and not Monahan? Because somebody was saying that we need to pronounce it Monaghan. Anyway, who gives a shit? Shawnee Monaghan and Donovan George. That's the Chicago connection, Don George. Monaghan is 5 years into his pro career, 25 fights, though. And, I mean, they've kind of pumped the brakes a bit on him, and it's been a source of jokes. Honest fighter, nothing wrong with it, but he looks to be a level below what we would call elite, and they seem to know it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that they're kind of matching him accordingly, and that's nothing against Don George, but he's had some trouble putting together a decent win streak himself in the last few years, and his most recent higher-profile fight, he was taken out by our boy Caleb Truax. So I think that we could have another situation where it's not really high-level boxing, but maybe evenly matched.
Yeah, and he's been out of the ring for a while, too. But I do think George is kind of tough enough that he can beat a guy on Monaghan's level. So it kind of depends. Yeah, we got to see what kind of condition he comes in. But, I mean, I think that George has definitely fought the better level of opposition. I mean, there's no question about that.
No question.
He's been in with real great, you know, great fighters. Well, Donna Stevenson. And gave him a really tough fight. So, like you said, Monaghan is honest fighter, nothing special really. You know, it's good that he's one of those guys who kind of did develop a really good local following on that kind of lower level in New York. And he's been put on a lot of those cards there. I think he was on the Cotto Martinez card. I think he was even on the Cotto Margarito 2 card going back. You know, he has a loyal fan base, but I think this is probably going to be the toughest fight. And I'm going to be rooting for Chi-Town and going for Donovan George. And I actually think George can beat him. So we'll see, but it could be a good kind of, you know, I hate to use the term club fighter, club level, whatever. I think George is probably a little bit better than that. And maybe Monaghan is too, but I mean, it could be a good, that type of brawl between two guys who are, you know, a little bit less skilled. And, you know, at some point, Monaghan is going to lose if he steps up. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, being on having a TV spot and getting a good opportunity and having a guy who can, you know, I think George can be involved in some exciting fights. That's the most important thing. If they put on a good fight, then, you know, everyone will be happy. It doesn't really matter. I mean, we're not predicting either guy to become like a pound-for-pound star. So at this point, I think it's, you know, protecting Monaghan's O in the loss column is, you know, kind of pointless.
Well, competitive fights do count for something. I mean, even if they are kind of lower level, it's a good thing. You know, I mean, we're not total savages here. We're not total purists either. But, you know, I'm fine with if we are going to have this kind of almost excessive amount of boxing on and thrown at us, at least, you know, if the fights are going to be competitive but not that high level, I'm fine with that. You know, that's I think that a lot of people forget that we're seeing a whole lot of boxing. So I think the majority of it's probably not going to be very good, just, you know, being truthful. But I had totally forgotten about this until I went and I was looking it up and looking up records and all that type of stuff. But Donovan George had tested positive in his last fight, or after his last fight against Dia Davis, or at the very least it came out, you know, after his last fight. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, it was like Tylenol or something real stupid, you know, like Motrin or something like that, that he had tested positive for. So, I mean, it wasn't a situation where he got caught trying to juice or something like that. Slightly different. It sounded like he had re-aggravated an injury and wound up taking some Motrin or something like that and tested positive for it. And so it was just kind of a dumb mistake. I do kind of feel bad for him because he seems like he's a nice dude with a bit of a troubled checkered past, but he seems like he's a nice dude trying to, you know, do well for himself. And if everything is, you know, karmically aligned, if all things being equal, he probably should beat Shawnee Monaghan.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. But at the same time, I mean, I think it's a pretty evenly matched fight. You know, I mean, Monaghan's okay, and he is undefeated and, you know, theoretically has maybe more to fight for. But
I do kind of agree in terms of the experience, and I think showing a little bit more skill and fighting a better level of opposition. I mean, I would favor George.
Yeah. I didn't even bother looking to see if there was a line for that fight. I would be kind of surprised if there were, but I didn't really want to spend too much time looking around for it anyway. But my guess would be that George.
Yeah, I was trying to find out what the Cleverly and Fanfara betting odds were, just out of curiosity.
Did you see him?
So I was going to try to. Well, I'm trying to look it up right now. I think Fanfara is like a 3-1 favorite. Oh, he's like a. Yeah, he's like a 2-1 favorite, something like that.
I was going to say 3-1 sounds about right. I mean, yeah. Cleverly is not going to stop him, so that automatically right there takes away, you know, one possible outcome. So yeah, 3-1, 2-1, something like that sounds about right.
Yeah, I think I would definitely get all over Fanfara with those odds. Pause. But you know, it just seems like yeah, he's going to have every favorite in, you know. Kind of every intangible would be going in his, you know, to his advantage, it would seem. But I don't know. Yeah, if you're betting on fights like Donovan George, Shawnee Monaghan, that's might have a gambling problem.
Yeah, you might have a gambling problem. So, yeah. Well, good luck to everybody looking up odds of that fight right now. But actually. There, I swear, I'm going to like, I'm almost done with the preview, I swear. There's also the one last thing was Joseph Parker, who's a talented young New Zealander heavyweight. He's taking on Callie Meehan, a bit of a name, blast from the past kind of name. That's tomorrow, I believe, and that's on, you know, some Sky Sports pay-per-view, like Sky Sports Australia pay-per-view. I'm sure there will be a stream of it somewhere, but you didn't hear that from me. And then Devin Alexander fights Aaron Martinez on ESPN tonight. The co-feature is Lee Selby, the Welsh Buddy McGirt. Or wait, no, that's his nickname, right? The Welsh Buddy McGirt? No. He's fighting Fernando Montiel, who is a few years and a few pounds past what is probably viable for him, but we could see some fancy moves. It's a real hashtag purist kind of fight, probably. But, anyway, I just wanted to get those things out there just so people knew, just in case they're depending on us for their – I hope they're not depending on us for any scheduling or anything like that. If you are, you're foolish. So, to stupid-ass stoners, yeah, I think the fight's on Friday. I mean, I think, I guess, I don't know. I mean, does it matter? We'll see it sometime. So there's some other shit going on this weekend anyway. But there were a few things. It's looking like we're probably going to have a short show today, but there were a few things that did happen last week, James. Not much of note in terms of high quality, but it's possible that the knockout of the year was scored, holy shit, on NBC Sports and live from Gabriel Bracero versus Danny O'Connor. It was a rematch, and we brought it up last week. I think it was kind of expected that O'Connor had the higher upside between the two and was more likely to win, but Gabriel Bracero was not at all interested in having that shit at all. And in the first round, he caught O'Connor with the old fellow southpaw left hand, and O'Connor went down hard and, like, very badly. It was one of those knockouts where you really you hope the guy's okay.
I didn't even see it.
Dude, it was like bad.
Yeah, I forgot to watch that. I heard people talking about it on Twitter, but yeah, I didn't see it, so I'll definitely we'll look that
we'll
up.
Seek it out. It's somewhere. I think Scott posted it on Bad Left Hook's front page, so yeah, it's somewhere anyway, but yeah, it was bad. It was real bad. When we brought it up last week, it's not like we were expecting a whole lot from the fight, and we were kind of like bringing it up like, all right, well, it's going to be on the schedule, so we might as well talk about it for a few minutes. It was one of those things. And it's not like, you know, you didn't miss anything high level, but yeah, that was one awful, awful knockout. Awful. Basically, it was kind of like you imagine two southpaws. Southpaws are generally not used to fighting each other. So a lot of the time when you see two southpaws match up, it's really awkward, you know, more awkward than an orthodox fighter against a southpaw usually is, because it's so strange. And then you wind up, like a really good example is Antonio Tarver versus Eric Harding. I don't know if a lot of people remember that fight, but that was the, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm from Philadelphia fight. And that was two southpaws. And what winds up happening a lot of the time is that they don't see each other's left hands. And so they wind up getting caught with those overhand left or those left crosses from the southpaw stance. And that's what happened. Danny O'Connor like reached to the point where his legs were like totally crossed. Like it, his body was like turned around reaching for his left hand and he didn't move his legs at all. And Bracero just like, boom, caught him about as flush as you could possibly catch him. And everyone just went silent. The whole place was silent for like 10 straight minutes. Like, is he dead? It was bad. Sounds like he got released from the hospital that night. Everything's okay. Nobody's seriously injured. But holy cow. Yeah. So go watch it. It was bad. also, live from Manchester on Sky Sports, I believe, earlier on Saturday, Terry Flanagan just destroyed Diego Magdaleno. The prevailing opinion was that Magdaleno should at least be able to give Flanagan some grief, if not upset him, take his belt out of Manchester. But Magdaleno looked like he was having some sort of footing or like footwear issue or something like that in the first, and he kept almost doing the splits. It's kind of weird, but he went down three times for the TKO in round two. I don't know. Nobody really expected that kind of win. So again, worth mentioning, and it was for a belt. So yay. whatever. I mean, it was for some random belt. I do have to kind of admit that it is a little bit funny in the aftermath of that fight. I don't want to sound condescending, although I probably don't have any choice now, but it was almost funny, kind of like cute almost, to watch the reaction from the British press, the British boxing press. And I saw a handful of different headlines after that Flanagan fight where it was like, you know, there's no question who the best lightweight in Britain is now. And it's like, I was just cracking up like, really? Like, was there some sort of like heated debate over the who the best lightweight? I don't know. Maybe I'm just stupid and we're not used to those types of, you know, patriotic discussions. Who is the best American cruiserweight, James? Like, what? Really? Like, are we debating?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But it's probably a lot more important.
We'll wave the flag every
once in a while. To British fans than to us, but nonetheless, it was just kind of like, okay, well, whatever, that's cool. But yeah, it was, at the very least, it was, kind of reaffirming that there is right now a bit of a resurgence or some sort of surge in British boxing, which is good for them and for me too, because I like watching it.
Yeah, I think that's a quality win. You know, I mean, the guy's only lost before to Rocky Martinez, and that was kind of a back and forth fight. It was relatively close on the card, so to just blow him away,
a lot of people
won. See it, but you know, giving him that first TKO, I mean, that's something kind of worthy.
Yeah, it was at the very least worth mentioning. It was just kind of strange the way that it went down. Oh, also, I had totally forgotten about this till right now. Espinosa Boxing, who, if I'm not mistaken, I'm almost positive, represents Magdaleno, and you know that's Frank Espinosa Jr., I think, and he's the one who runs their Twitter account. It's a good Twitter account. They're, you know, all up in the fight scene and whatnot. He was tweeting, you know, while they were getting ready for the fights. I don't know how true this is, and this is just what he was saying, but he was saying that, like, I guess in their dressing room or something, that they had not provided Magdaleno with, like, anything in terms of, like, water, tape, gauze, you know, the types of things that the local either commission or promoter or whatever is supposed to provide. And I don't know if that's a legal thing they're going to have to look into. Maybe they're just going to kind of cut their losses and be like, well, our guy got knocked out and that's the end of it. But anyway, from what they were describing, it just kind of sounded strange. Like maybe Magdalena was kind of getting cast aside a little bit. But at the end of the day, he also did get kind of cast aside in the ring. It was kind of ugly. I didn't really expect that. Flanagan just kind of went right after him and took him out. Didn't waste any time. So it was a good win. Good quality win. UK boxing. James Bagg is in fucking hell right now. Speaking of hell in UK boxing, just before the Flanagan-Magdaleno fight, Liam Smith won a vacant belt. I might have to double-check that, but I'm pretty sure it was a vacant belt, 154 pounds, by catching up to John Thompson in the seventh round. And many will remember that Thompson was taken out pretty scarily by Frank Galarza. It was one of the knockouts of the year in 2014, and it was one of those, like, sinking to the canvas face-first knockouts, you know, which are never good. When a guy can't even keep his head up, you know, this is not good. So Smith kind of took a while to get warmed up, but once he finally did, Thompson again went to the canvas like that. Poor guy. he basically was doing very well through five and a half rounds, got caught, wilted, got taken out. The Brits are coming, dude.
The Redcoats are coming.
It's veritable onslaught.
A renaissance of UK boxing. Not since the 1910s has the island produced such fine competitors.
Not since the Viking hordes came from Saxony. Now, I don't know where they came from, but yeah, it's been a while. It's been a few centuries. So, yeah, they actually really are having a bit of a surge. And it's unfortunate if people really are biased against UK boxing. Because it is a fun scene. It is a fun scene. It's kind of tough to keep up with, especially if you're struggling already to keep up with the American fight scene, which is understandable because there's a shitload of boxing on TV these days. But anyway, that's not really something to generally complain about.
Yeah, well, it's become much more dispersed, obviously, with like PBC on Network and Showtime has kind of increased their budget. It's like you used to go to HBO and think that, well, you know, I'm a subscriber to HBO Boxing. I should be seeing every major fight that's out there, you know, and you watch American TV and you think, oh, I should be seeing everything. But there are those cracks where, you know, like a lot of the fights overseas, especially in the UK, where there are kind of world-class level guys, but for us to watch them, you have to find a stream on a Saturday afternoon, and things like the flyweight division, which we don't really get a whole lot of coverage. I mean, just now Chocolatito's getting on HBO,
yeah.
And you know, they were doing those shows with Zoo, but I mean, a lot of it has been either some independent pay-per-view or you have to try to catch a stream. God, I don't know, I keep saying that. So you know, those are the things that I guess we've seen, you know, like myself, I mean, a lot of the reason I picked Matisse over Postal was just not being as familiar with Postal. You know, we tend to, I think, overvalue the things that we, you know, that we get exposed to, and maybe it is kind of a bias of what we're seeing on our premium cable networks. You know, these are supposed to be the world-class boxing matches, so if there's fighters that I haven't heard of, they must not be that good, and obviously that's not really true.
Well, I mean, you know, we tend to value what we know, you know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of how it is. And so it's understandable. I mean, there's a misconception that the British scene is always less than, or never is competitive with the American scene, or, you know, fighters from Britain never come over to the US and are successful and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's just not true. The British scene is very lively. It's very diverse. There's a lot of young fighters coming up, and the amateur scene over there is very different as well. So, you know, I think that in the coming years, unless the U.S. really gets its act together, you know, and right now there's a shit. What does it stand for? Amateur International. Fuck. Amateur International Boxing Association, I think it is, the AIBA. There's a world championship right now. The 2015 World Championships in Doha are going on, and the U.S. just got like totally taken out because our amateur system is just shite. Also, a number of the really good amateurs from the U.S. didn't even compete over there, but nonetheless, our amateur system's shite. And in a couple of years, if we don't, you know, figure out a way to fix that, we could be looking at an actual British invasion where we're looking kind of stupid because we don't really have any thriving amateur scene. Yeah.
No, that won't happen. Let's not get carried away.
No, I'm not going to get too carried away. but we do not have a strong amateur scene, and that's I don't see how that's going to help anyway. I did want to say one last thing, and we can take it away or we can do whatever, but not too long ago, I was making jokes, mostly on Twitter, and I was it was totally tongue-in-cheek, and then it was pointed out to me later that I was, like, I guess being racist, but I was going, like, yay. Well, I was going, like, yay, chocolate Tito, like two words. And the reason why I was saying that was because of how everybody was pronouncing chocolatito. It kind of harkens back to that old SNL skit with Jimmy Smits, where it's a bunch of white people in, like, a boardroom, and they're ordering Mexican lunch. And it's, like, white dudes, and he's like, you know, based on our projections, I think I'm going to really have a burrito. And they start, like, over-pronouncing, like, the Spanish words. And sometimes I feel like that. Like, I'm like, dude, I'm a white guy. I don't know why I'm pronouncing shit like this. But anyway, I was laughing at how everybody else was pronouncing it, because they're pronouncing chocolatito really white. Chocolatito, you know? And I was just cracking up, like, because it sounded like chocolate Tito. And someone was like, damn, that's racist. And I was like, fuck. I guess if I'm being racist, I better stop. But anyway, I made the joke again the other day and didn't want to be perceived as a total Kovalev.
Yeah, you don't want to be you don't want to be that guy. But
I did make the Arab joke one time, so I'm walking on eggshells here.
You're anti-Semitic, and that is racist. So, but as long as you can manage to only offend that one race, then I think you're, you know.
I'm pretty equal opportunity, man. Come on now. I love chocolatito, Roman Gonzalez. I don't like making fun of people.
Other than when you instantly favored it and retweeted the Kovalev tweet, you have a great track record on race relations.
Great track record. Come on, I'm a friend to the gay community. I'm a big friend to the gay community. Everybody knows this. Oh, man. I just wanted to set the record straight. That's all. Let's see. Shit, you brought up Cotto Canelo. Is there really anything else that needs to be, like, tackled? Because I can't think of anything right at the moment. But
not really. I mean, I think, you know, we've kind of covered all the bases here. I mean, there's not much more to say as far as I haven't really seen any new news coming out other than your boy Amir Khan, you know, withdrawing from the Pacquiao negotiations.
Yeah. I just
instantly
have to laugh,
setting back UK boxing another 10 years.
It's basically, it's on the level of him saying, Floyd, I'm giving you 24 hours. What did you just say?
Yeah, he's got a little bit of an inflated sense of his place and his worth when it comes to these type of fights. But exciting guy. But yeah, you know, I mean, I think overall, I just want to say, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to this weekend in a sense, because I do think it's you know, with Golovkin and Chocolatito, I mean, it's guaranteed excitement and action and violence. I'm just not really sure how competitive it's going to be, and I have serious doubts that, you know, both of these fights are going to kind of turn out to be big mismatches. And, you know, I don't like seeing a guy like Lemieux, you know, now that we've seen a lot of the promotional stuff and gotten to know him a little bit, you know, I mean, I like his story. I mean, I like where he's coming from. I respect the, you know, ambition to go out there and be great. I'm just afraid I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to see him getting revived with smelling salts on Saturday night. And, you know, that's the part of the sport that I don't really like. So, I mean, I always kind of prefer to make the best matches possible and try to get, you know, get guys as evenly matched as they can be. But all that said, I mean, I think that, you know, Lemieux, as much as any of those other middleweights, has kind of distinguished himself recently and put himself in line for this shot. So, you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, Saturday night, he's going to have the chance to do something crazy and do something great and, you know, really put his name on the map. So we'll see.
Did you ever watch The League?
I watched a couple. I think I saw the first two seasons.
I didn't like keep up with it, you know, super closely or anything. But when you were talking earlier about Amir Khan and whatnot, I just wanted to crack out a Child Please from Andre. Child Please. It's great.
Yeah. I think that he's a little bit, I mean, he's definitely kind of a goofball, but there's still so many Amir Khan fights I would love to see, including a Pacquiao fight. It's too bad that he withdrew himself from negotiations for it, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot
yeah,
of fights that I think he
fight.
Could be in
what
that would be
fuck,
really,
Amir?
Really exciting. And it's a really good fight, and when I heard that he might fight Ruslan, and that's since gotten kind of debunked, but when that was floating out there, I mean, I thought that would be a great fight. I'd love to see him fighting a guy like Kovalnikov. I'd love to see a Garcia rematch. I mean, there's so many good fights to be involved in. For what?
Amir Khan, he was like on the verge of becoming a hero. He was like, oh, he's going to take on Provodnikov? Let's do this.
Oh, yeah,
oh, Pacquiao, even better. Now it's like, you
yeah,
know
this
what?
Guy's really looking for a tough opponent.
And
he doesn't seem interested in fighting Kell Brook, which is just a total no-brainer. And, you know, he did say that he would take the Garcia rematch, but we'll see. I don't know if, you know, how. I'm not sure if that's makeable or not. I mean, I guess it should be. But, you know, you see things. It's like every single rumor that you see connected to Amir Khan so far has just been complete bullshit. So, you know, I saw
yeah.
something the other day that was like.
Except for the
Khan,
Gucci
person. You know,
rumor.
That was true. But, yeah, Khan's like, you know, he's out of the Pacquiao fight once Garcia rematch in December. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm sure that'll happen. I mean, that would be awesome. I would love to see that fight. I thought the first fight was great. You know, I think that was one of my favorite fights of the last few years. But, like, do we really believe that boxing is going to give us that fight in December on PBC after they've basically been, you know, spent the last week patting themselves on the back and doing a victory lap for making Sean Porter and Keith Thurman?
Yeah, no shit.
I mean, you know, to be honest, I think Khan Garcia too is just as good as Thurman and Porter. So I'm not expecting that to happen.
We've talked about it before, but they're just fights that you don't do cartwheels because you make this fight. You just make the fights. These are the fights that build you towards something else. These aren't the fights you should be building to. But
exactly.
we'll get back on the bashing PBC train, I'm sure. Next week, depending on how all of this stuff goes. Shit, there was 4 PBC cards in, 5 days or something like that? That's pretty crazy. But, yeah, it just gives us a lot of opportunities to talk shit, right, Foley?
Oh, we will.
Oh, we will.
we talked shit about the highly anticipated, you know, Golovkin pay-per-view this weekend. So we could definitely talk some shit about PBC.
Yeah, we'll make anything negative, really.
I just don't like the pay-per-view aspect, the automatic, like, well, his profile's been built up. We got to turn this guy into a pay-per-view star. It's like, well, give me a pay-per-view worthy fight. And at the same time, I'm admitting that I'm the sucker who's going to buy it anyway. But, you know, it's like, I don't really think it's a great fight. Yeah, I know. I mean, I'd love to pretend like I'm not, but I'm going to. But, you know, but
yeah.
A lot of that is just to get away from my block party. So, I mean, some of that
dude,
is
you know what?
Strategic.
It is. Pleistocene era goes 400,000 years. Man evolves, you know, develops tools, medicine, what it is. It is what it is.
Exactly. A phrase that means nothing.
It means nothing at all. Just like his career. So, thanks everybody once more for listening in. We'll be back. We'll definitely be back. So in the meantime, tell all your celebrity boxing writers, sexual deviants, popes, tell them all about Top Men Boxing Radio if you enjoy listening. And also, quickly, tomorrow, Aris Pina and I are going to do another history show in honor of this Golovkin-Lemieux fight that nobody wants to see, talking about all the middleweight fights and great middleweights through the eras. And Lee Groves from Ring Magazine, author, boxing historian, he's also going to join us, so it's going to be a lot of fun. But if you're on Twitter, though, please follow my boy James Foley here at jfoley81, and Bad Left Hook is where he'll eventually someday come up with the follow punch that nobody ever reads and everyone hates, apparently. Foley, sorry.
I'm going to be Russian tallying follow. Up all the G-jabs and C uppercuts and everything this weekend, so I'll come back to you next week with my full report.
Yes. Yes, so we'll get to see what's in, you know, Marcellus Wall's suitcase after all. I love it. Get to see it. So on Twitter also, if you are so kind, follow me, Patrick Connor, at Twitter at Patrick M. Cotter, and visit thefightcity.com if you want to read the stuff that I write. And like Top Men Boxing Radio on Facebook, rate us on iTunes, all that type of stuff. So, Foley, maybe we step on Fortune Cookie.
All right, man. War Lemieux.
War Lemieux. All right, everybody. Take it easy.